Okay, well, we are back. Welcome, friends. This is episode 20 of the Shuttle Pod. I'm Jared Whitley, and I'm joined by my good friends.
Hi, I'm Kaylee Iacovino.
Hey, this is Brian Drew.
And we are here to introduce you to our most disappointing Star Trek episodes. That's the subject today. So what we did is we looked at episodes that were hyped up. There's some reason that we should have been excited about them, but they fell flat for one reason or another. We got a list here. We've got all five of the series represented. I looked through the animated series to see if there were any disappointing animated series episodes, but you know, each one of them is a classic. I don't think you could pick any one of those apart. Or at least I don't think any of them were hyped up in any way that you'd have any kind of expectation. No. The only one maybe would be they do a sequel to Troubles with Tribbles, but it's still a pretty good episode. I definitely would not call that disappointing.
Yeah, it's charming.
Yeah, it is. It is. And the shtick they change with that is instead of the Tribbles multiplying, they get bigger. And so, you know, and they can do that in a cartoon format and it looks reasonable. So I definitely don't complain about that. Okay, but the one I wanted to start with is a Deep Space Nine episode called Rivals. I don't know. How well do you guys remember this episode?
I can't lie to you. I don't remember it very well at all.
I am of the same line there. I don't really remember what happened in the episode.
Okay, well, I'm...
But fill us in, Mr. Whitley.
Yeah. Give us the synopsis.
I'm more of the Deep Space Nine guy on our crew anyway. What this is we have a rival bar owner, a con man, comes to the station. He starts his bar, and he's in competition with Quark. And the thing about Quark is he's not like a warrior. He's not a ship captain, so he's not going to get in the same kind of conflict that your Captain Sisko's or your Worf's are going to get into. But the kind of conflict that he'll have would be on the battlefield of commerce and the hospitality industry. And this rival bar owner and con man is actually the same race as Guinan. He's an El-Orian. The name they came up with in Star Trek Generations. And so this is someone who has the same powers that Guinan has. And so it's kind of like Quark facing off against his predecessor in the franchise, because Guinan was the first bar owner. And not only does he have all these, you know, these powers of being a good listener, right? They say he always knows when someone lies to them because he's got these psychic abilities. But the actor is played by Chris Sarandon, who's the same actor who played Prince Humperdinck in Princess Bride, which I just love that movie. I rewatched it again last week, and I think it is the best movie ever made. Right? It's just perfect.
Wow!
And yeah, absolutely, certainly the best like family comedy.
Better than Star Trek Generations. I mean, come on.
Okay, it's a close one. It's a close one.
Yeah.
But it's Princess Bride by a nose, and the nose is one of the RUSs.
It's a wonderful film, though. No, I agree with
you.
Yeah. It's yeah.
And so you're looking at this and you think, okay, this great guy from this great movie is going to be on it. There's this really good setup for what they're going to do with Quark. You know, this is someone who, if he's got Guinan's powers, could really give Quark a run for his money. And then what they do is they have this science fiction setup where he has some artifact that manipulates luck. And so, you know, there's all this chaos all over the station. And it just completely falls flat.
Now I remember it. Yeah. When you said the manipulating luck thing, I'm starting to remember that.
He's got some...
But it's like, so?
Yeah. And like, there's no like science fiction commentary on the nature of luck or superstition or like why some people might believe in astrology or carry a lucky rabbit's foot or...
Well, they could have done a whole like quantum thing if they wanted to, because, you know... You know, like the quantum world seems almost random.
Yeah,
you know, things happen depending on whether you look at them or not.
Yep.
So it gets it's a really freaky world that's really different from what we're living in.
Yeah.
So if they had somehow translated it, like luck actually has some kind of quantum property, or I mean, that's kind of silly, but at least it would have been some kind of attempt to tie in some kind of science.
Also, do you know what the term is for an elementary particle at the quantum level?
I do.
What's it called, Kayla?
It's called a quark.
It's called a quark.
Wow.
Yeah.
Side note, two of the cats that I lived with are named Charm and Strange. And if you know anything about quarks, those are two types of quarks, because my roommate is very nerdy.
Oh, interesting. See?
Oh, that Rick.
Yeah.
And you know, this rival, El-Orian, he could have had two sidekicks named.
Strange and Charm. That would have been perfect.
Or Charm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
So it's not a great episode.
And just to sort of, as Brian and I said, I didn't really remember this episode very well, and so I was kind of going over and looking at all the synopses and the trailers for the episodes that we came up with to talk about today. And I just would like to read the Memory Alpha 2-sentence synopsis of the episode, because to me it's like, just the way it's written and what it describes the episode as being sounds completely boring, and it also sounds just like a parody of a Star Trek episode.
Hear it.
All right, so tell me what you guys think about it. Okay. Quark feels threatened when a con artist arrives on the station and opens up a competing bar. Meanwhile, Chief O'Brien is determined to beat Dr. Bashir at racquetball.
Wow. That's some real danger there on the final frontier.
Right? Like, what a boring episode.
Yeah.
I mean, that is completely like
O'Brien,
like...
and Bashir play racquetball while Quark has a competition with another guy's bar? Who cares?
Yeah. See, the thing that might have been better is if you combine this with, like, there's a Romulan plot to destroy the wormhole or something, and the Romulan device that's threatening the wormhole is the thing that's throwing everyone's luck off, or the neutral.
Or it was predicated on luck or something, and so the device was, like, messing with the the Elorian's device was messing with the Romulan's device.
Sure, so
that.
It's somehow connected. Right. Right.
So it's actually relevant to anything.
Yeah. There's this great episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer called The Zeppo, where the A storyline is that Xander, who's the loser of the group, is just trying to prove himself, and the B storyline is that the universe is going to be destroyed, right? And so they do this really clever thing where the less big deal in the world is actually the bigger deal in the episode. And that might have been a good idea to do with this episode. Instead, both things that happen are happening, the A and B storyline, are kind of duds.
Yeah. And they're both very campy. And that was the point of the episode in the Zeppo. It's like, guys trying to fit in or whatever, campy, pretty run-of-the-mill standard storyline. Yeah. And that's what these are both very, like, this could have been a sitcom. That could have been the description of a sitcom episode.
Yeah.
Could have been. Except sometimes sitcoms make you laugh, and this wasn't even that. Although, and this will be the last thing.
This one wasn't supposed to.
No.
You know what that sounds like? That sounds like a Star Trek version of Seinfeld.
Kind of.
Where nothing happens.
Yeah. It's a show about nothing.
It's a show about nothing. Yeah.
If only they had had Seinfeld playing the DeLorean, that would have been perfect.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
I would watch that.
That would have been good. The only thing I like about this episode, and then we'll move on to the next one, is Quark quotes a rule of acquisition where the Elorian is trying to get a bribe at the end to leave, to just get out of his hair, and Quark gives him a really measly bribe, and he says, oh, give me more, I have my dignity. And Quark quotes a rule of acquisition that says, dignity and an empty sack is worth the sack. And I just love that. That's what Quark thinks about dignity. It's like, if you don't have any money with it, who cares about your dignity? Anyway, I thought that was a good Quark line.
Yeah, it's very Ferengi.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, moving on. Our next episode. Now, this is actually an arc. There's one episode in specific I kind of like to focus on, but this is a three-parter, essentially. This is the Q arc on Voyager. And we know Q came and reappeared on the Voyager three times. Once very early on, and then once, like, because there was some kind of civil war on the Q continuum, and then once when he comes back with basically his wife and his son. Anyway, now Kayla, you're more the Voyager expert. So what are some of your thoughts on these episodes?
Yeah, I guess I think this is a perfect example of disappointing episodes in the way that we've defined it, because, you know, as a fan watching this, you're like, oh, Q is going to come back. Awesome. Everyone loves Q. Everyone loves John DeLancey. Most people do. You know, he was a great character in Next Generation. Yeah. So it was really exciting to see them bringing that back and how they were going to interact with the Voyager crew. And I don't know, it wasn't the same Q that we remembered. And, like, because Q was great against Picard.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, and the Q Janeway thing, they didn't have a very good, really, chemistry like Q and Picard did. They were just perfect because they were so diametrically opposed in a lot of ways. And so it kind of fell flat for me, I guess. And, you know, I think it's the first episode where, you know, the Q comes to the Voyager and it basically wants to die, right?
Yeah, Death Wish is the name of the first episode.
Death Wish,
and
okay, yeah.
Say, and the thing that disappointed me about this the most is virtually every Q episode has the letter Q in the title. And instead of Death Wish, I wanted them to call this episode Q-icide.
Ah.
Wanted to say that for 20 years. So I've been able
Somehow that feels like dark to me.
Okay, maybe it's a little too dark. All right, okay, yeah. I take it back.
All of a sudden, it was like, oh, that's kind of upsetting now.
You're right.
Yeah, we don't have suicide in the 24th century,
or homicide,
Jared.
Or any kind of side.
Barely. Yeah, don't you know that?
Except for Wolf in the Fold, but we'll forget about that.
anyway, so sorry, I interrupted you.
Yeah, no, so I like what they were trying to do with that episode. To me, it was like, you know, it was very Star Trek, and then it was this allegory for, you know, euthanasia in a lot of ways. Like, should people have the right to die?
Sure.
And things like that. And so that's a very Star Trek thing to try and tackle, which I can get behind. But later, it's like they just kept bringing it back. And it felt like they just kept bringing Q back because they're like, we like Q, yay, we want to see Q again. It was like fan fiction, you know. It was.
Oh, that's a good term to use, fan fiction.
The other thing
is they seem, in this arc, they seem to forget some of their own continuity. For example, one of the things they hyped up is that Jonathan Frakes guest starred in Death Wish. And you know, like Q has, he's able to, or when I say Q, I mean the other Q, right? The one they find, the Delta Q, let's call him.
The Voyager Q,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's able to, or Quinn, I think that's the name they use.
That's right, they give him a name, Quinn.
So he summons, like, three people from Earth history to come be his witnesses for why he's a good person and should be allowed to commit suicide. And one of them is William T. Riker. And, you know, Commander Riker was on the team that had first contact with the Q Continuum. He was on the Enterprise when the Q introduced them to the Borg. He was part of all these intersections with Q and humanity. And at one point, he was given the powers of the Q, right? This is a guy who has a lot of really interesting things he could say on this subject. And the reason they bring him back is because one of Riker's ancestors, who was like a soldier in the Civil War, had his life saved by Quinn. And that's why he's coming to testify. And it's like, what? Oh.
Seriously?
Yeah,
totally forgotten
that.
Yeah,
it's stupid. It's like,
I vaguely remember
that.
Yeah,
they bring him back so he can say, oh, if it weren't for Quinn, I never would have been born because my ancestor would have been died in the Civil War. And it's like, okay, then bring
that's
back the ancestor,
stupid.
Right? You know?
Yeah, right?
I mean, he brings back Isaac Newton as well, so why couldn't he bring this other person from history? And so that always was just kind of weird. It's like when they brought Jonathan Frakes onto Deep Space Nine, there was a really clever plot point for why they did it. They brought him back as Thomas Riker. But for this, it was
whole awesome.
Lot of wait, what was that? Sorry, Brian?
It was awesome.
Yeah, it was awesome. It's a fantastic episode.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I thought that was dumb.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of felt like Q's time on Star Trek kind of ended with all good things, too. Like,
yeah.
I felt like when he basically fades into the black at the end, like, I kind of felt like that was closing the book on that character. Unless, of course, they were going to put him in a movie
exactly.
or something.
That was
but
just
like,
what I was about to say. Yeah.
But other than that, I didn't feel like he belonged on DS9 or Voyager.
No, and in DS9, they figured it out, and they said, no, this is wrong. And, but with Voyager, they brought him back twice again.
Sometimes you go to the well a little too often.
Yeah.
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 Mm-hmm.
It's often the case. The other Killer and I were talking about this before we started recording the podcast. You know, if I'm Captain Janeway and Q shows up on my bridge, I am not going to be righteously indignant and stick my head out and say, how dare you interfere in our affairs? And how dare you judge us? I would say, would you please snap your fingers and send me and my people home? Please, please, please.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Yeah. You have the power to solve all of my problems.
Yeah.
Yeah, with a wave of your hand, literally. Yeah.
See, and to be fair, that's in because the last episode of the Q arc is like right before the finale of Voyager, and he like gives her a pad with some special math on it or something, and ostensibly that's how they figure out how to use the transwarp drive or whatever to get home, and so they kind of do that eventually, but it's like it feels unsatisfying because again he could just snap his fingers. And he could have just done that 7 years ago, and that also then, you know, if Q just solves their problem, that's a literal deus ex machina right there.
Yeah.
Or QS ex machina.
Nice.
Sorry. Do we want to I think that's all we have to say about the Q arc.
Yeah.
Indeed.
I think you summed it up. I was kind of laughing to myself a couple minutes ago when you're like, so I thought that was kind of dumb.
Oh.
I was thinking to myself, that's going to be the thesis statement to every one of these choices that we pick. It's like, why were we disappointed in them? It's like, it's just kind of dumb.
Yep.
Okay, the next one. This is our only original series episode on the list. And, you know, none of us were alive at the time this was on, so it's a little weird for this to be disappointing because how could it have been hyped up for us? But I wanted to include this on the list because it's the series finale, and when you of TOS, and you compare that to the other series finales, and it's just kind of nothing, right? And you think, how disappointing must this have been in 1969 for you to watch this, and then that was it, right?
Yeah, but it wasn't designed to be a series finale.
Sure.
Yeah, and of course we're talking about Turnabout
Turnabout
Intruder,
Intruder.
where
Right.
an alien comes and swaps bodies with Kirk.
It's not
It's
an
not an alien.
alien, it's an old flame of Kirk's.
Oh, right.
Janice
There we
Lester.
go.
But it's where did the yeah, wow, I need to watch Turnabout Intruder again. When where
No,
did their
you're not. No,
technology
you
no,
don't. No, you
you
don't.
absolutely don't. Kayla, you'd hate it.
You really don't. It's like some, I forget the name of the aliens, but she was, I
They
think,
had,
and now I'm
yeah.
probably going to get my ass kicked for this when people listen to this, but like she and one of her colleagues, a Dr. Coleman, I believe, are on this planet and they're unearthing all this alien technology. And I think they find this machine that basically could transfer consciousness from one person
Yeah.
to another.
Yeah. But that's
That's
an
basically
alien
what it is.
technology, isn't it?
Yes, it
Okay.
is.
Okay, cool.
But
I remember that.
she's a human.
Yeah, no,
Yes,
you're right, you're right, you're
yeah.
right.
She's an old flame of Kirk's, but yeah, I mean, the series just, you know, is limping to its end. It's been well chronicled by the back end of the third season. The show was creatively in a really bad
Yeah.
way, and Turnabout Intruder is not the nadir of the third season, but it's pretty close. And the only value that episode has is Shatner, who is completely out of his mind throughout the entire episode.
Yeah, there's just some great like shots of him just like looking totally insane.
Yeah, and as it turns out, apparently he was fighting the flu that week.
Oh,
They were shooting.
interesting.
Is that why he's all sweaty the whole episode?
Yeah, probably, yeah.
You know,
Poor guy.
is it because this is the episode right where it shows him and he's all in his quarters and he's like, "I'm Captain
No,
Kirk."
that's the Enemy Within.
That's the Enemy Within. Oh,
Yeah.
because he's all sweaty in that scene.
Yeah. Well, that's Evil Kirk,
That's Evil
remember?
Kirk.
E
Yeah, that's
Evil
right.
Kirk was sweaty all the time.
That's right. Yeah, he was always sweaty.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, well,
Yeah, that was an
Kirk
episode where
seems sweaty a lot.
that episode and this one were the two episodes where the director needed to be like, Bill, you need to take it down a little bit.
Whatever, man. That is like Michael Jordan of the 1997 finals, where he's got the flu and he just rises to the occasion.
Yeah. Yeah, so anyway, yeah, the show kind of just limped off the air. Like Star Trek, when Turnabout Intruder aired, I think there had been like a 3 month gap where like NBC had pulled Star Trek off the
Oh,
schedule,
wow.
and that was basically the last episode lying around. I think like they stopped broadcasting episodes in like March, and then like they had this one last episode lying around. I think they threw it on in like June, and it was this one. Yeah, so if you were if you were somebody like, you know, who was putting in for that letter writing campaign to bring it back for the third year. And that's what you got at the end? Yeah, I would imagine you'd be very
That would be
disappointed.
disappointing, right?
Yeah,
Yeah.
I think another good reason to add this one to the list, like Jared said, it wasn't necessarily hyped and then disappointing in the way that these other episodes were, but partly that's because, you know, this is Star Trek is a television series that's been on the air for 50 years, and the way in which television works has changed so much since, you know, 1966, 1969. So, you know, they wouldn't the way that we would hype a show, even like Enterprise, which is old already,
Yeah.
you know, a decade old now, but even a show like Enterprise would have been hyped quite a bit. That would have been something you're watching the preview for next week's episode and you're excited about it, but not in the 60s. That's just not how it
No.
worked.
Yeah. No, Star Trek disappeared. The original series disappeared and it was very quiet. Nothing was made of it. It was just another canceled TV show.
Yeah.
That was it. There was nothing to
Yeah.
it. Nothing.
The
Only a handful of fans around to mourn it.
I think the only good thing that came out of this particular episode is when they were making Babylon 5, they shot the finale like well ahead of when it aired because they were afraid that something like this might happen, and then they were just going to insert the finale so that it would actually have a finale. It wouldn't just be cut abruptly off the air.
Ah,
Yeah.
I didn't know that. That's really
Yeah, it
cool.
is really cool. Although given that they were able to get to the conclusion of their 5-year story arc, the finale then now feels a little bit out of place. But, you know, they had to build a trap door for themselves. They did, and they did not get Turnabout Intruded.
Ouch.
Thanks. I thought
Yeah.
that'd be a good segue. All right, so our next episode, this is the penultimate episode of Next Generation. And we did a whole episode about how amazing the final episode of TNG is, but the second to last episode is called Preemptive Strike. And this is the last episode with Ro-Laren, who I just love. I think she and
Me too.
Barclay are the two best characters on all of TNG. And
Wow.
after Picard, I think.
After all the main
No, even
cast.
still, I like Laren, I
No.
like Ro and Barclay better than Riker or Deanna or even Crusher. Not that I don't like Gates McFadden, but just because they didn't do enough with her.
I tend to agree. And
Yeah, Ro is an
Ro doesn't.
underused character.
I think she's underused because of decisions by the actress rather than decisions by the creative staff. But they wanted to, in the seventh season, they were trying to close off any loose ends. That's where they close off the stuff with Q and they close off the stuff with lore.
Wesley.
And with Wesley, thank you. Yeah, Wesley a couple
Yeah, with
episodes
Wesley,
before.
yeah.
And they wanted to do the same with Ro. The problem is at that point, we have not just one, but two whole series that are dedicated to the idea of the Federation conflict with the Cardassians on Deep Space Nine, and then of course with the Maquis stuff on Voyager. So they bring her back, and we think, well, of course, where are her sympathies gonna be? Is she going to be loyal to Starfleet, more like how Captain Sisko was when he was confronted with this decision, or is she gonna be more loyal to the Maquis the way Chakotay was when he had the same decision to make?
Right.
And at this point, it just kind of feels like the character doesn't really fit there anymore. Because she's kind of been overshadowed by the storyline that she basically started. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's disappointing as a bookend for Ro-Laren's character.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think the story itself is a good story,
Sure.
and it's interesting. And like putting her in that situation is interesting. It's always interesting to see a character in conflict like that. I mean, it's an interesting idea.
Yeah.
It just, I guess, I don't, I think, I guess it wasn't executed perfectly.
I was disappointed at the choice that she made, to be
Yeah, me
honest with
too.
you, and the betrayal of Picard, and like and I love that character, so I was really taken aback by that. I don't love that episode at all. I was very
Yeah,
disappointed.
the other thing is like with her joining the Maquis, you think, okay, well then we're going to see her on Deep Space Nine, and then we never did. And the thing that would have been awesome, because even though they're both, female Bajorans, Kira and Ro are very different characters, which I appreciate. And so the thing would have been great is if this had been a setup to a conflict between the two of them, right? Because Ro abandoned her people and sold out to go to Starfleet, and Kira stuck with her people and she stayed and fought, right? And Ro-Laren is shown to be kind of agnostic toward the Bajoran beliefs, and Kira is very devout. So there would have been a couple points where the two would have had some really interesting conflict. I think both actresses would have been up to the challenge. So this, in addition to being like a sad bookend, it feels like it might be a nice launch pad for a future great episode, and it isn't. The other thing is there's a scene where you mentioned like betraying Picard. Not only does she have a special relationship with Picard that's kind of disappointing to see fall flat, but she's also got a pretty cool relationship with Riker. Where, like, there's a scene in that episode, the next phase, where they think that Geordi and Ro have been killed when they've actually just been cloaked, and Riker says that he's wants to get, say some words at her funeral, right, on her behalf. He wants a eulogy. He wants to give the eulogy for her. And it seems like right before she turns on Riker, the two of them are there in the shuttle, and I'm like, okay, this is where she should ask him, what were you going to say about me? Of course, we're kind of continuity nerds, so we're going to pick up on that more anyway. But then she didn't even say that, and I thought that would have been a great way to continue that cord that had been threaded through several episodes with the character, and it didn't really work.
Yeah. I felt like there was a lot of missed opportunities with
Yeah,
Ro-Laren.
absolutely, absolutely.
And like you said, a lot of that had to do with Michelle Forbes more than anything.
Yeah, you think though, if that was going to be the case, if they were really going to introduce it, because what they wanted a replacement Wesley, right? They didn't want to just have a rotating red shirt at the helm. They wanted to have somebody who would be there reliably. And it's like if they're going to do that, then lock the actor or actress in ahead of time.
Yeah, no
So that
kidding. That's, yeah, that there's kind of fault on both sides,
it
isn't there?
is. It is.
Well, I don't think she really didn't want it, though, did she?
I know, but why? Like Jared's point is, don't hire someone that's not gonna.
If she doesn't want it,
yeah, but that may have developed though over time. That they, you know, I don't think when she was originally hired, the intention with the,
okay, sure,
for her to be this regular or semi-regular.
Okay,
she caught on, right?
They did want a replacement Wesley. I mean, I remember reading that in more than one place, and so that implies they want somebody who's gonna be there more often.
Right.
Okay, let me see. How many appearances?
But in show business, you're not going to commit to somebody like that without seeing them for a while and knowing whether they're working out or not.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sure.
So by the time, you know, they got around to probably coming to her, she either wanted to do other things or, you know, who the hell knows?
Yeah, the thing is, she...
There's probably a story out there detailing exactly why she wasn't on the show. But the three of us don't know.
I wonder if she ever goes to conventions. I'm sure this is the thing that she'd get asked every time. Here's the thing. Okay, I'm on Memory Alpha. She was in 6 episodes of season 5. So that's pretty good for a recurring character, right?
Mm-hmm. For one season.
That's more episodes of TNG than Barkley was in for 4 years, right? And then she was only in 1 episode for the subsequent 2 seasons. So maybe she did make a commitment when they brought her on and say, we'll do half a dozen episodes with you in 1 season. And that's all they committed to. And then to kind of fizzle out. And that one episode in season 6 where she's in, she's only in 2 scenes, and it's a little girl who plays Ensign Ro the rest of the episode.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Right. Rascals.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's such a good episode.
I like that episode.
Yeah, it's a fun little
show.
See,
now that's an episode. That's an example of Trek doing camp really well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's so campy, but it's so great. And I have to say, Child Guinan, my favorite.
Awesome. Oh, and the fact that they got the same little actress who played, you know, the child version of Whoopi Goldberg from Sister Act. That's great. I mean, you can't beat that.
Yeah.
I didn't even realize that. Oh, no way.
Yeah, it's a really good touch there.
That's really cool. Nice trivia nugget there, Mr. Willie.
That's what I do. And I sometimes make graceful segues onto our next episode.
Which would be another Next Generation
episode.
Another
TNG episode. This bridges 4 and 5, this would be the Klingon Civil War episodes of Redemption.
Right, two-parter.
Now, why might this be a little disappointing? There's some good stuff in it, definitely, but why would this be a little disappointing?
I probably have an unpopular opinion about it.
Let's hear it.
It was boring.
Oh, yeah, it was.
Yeah.
I agree. I agree with Kella. Yeah, absolutely.
I like when a lot of people are like, "Oh, I just love the Klingon-centric episodes." I think of this one, and I'm just like,
"Yeah, I agree."
It's like too much. Like, you know what it reminds me of? Well, maybe this is a bit of an extreme example, but it's sort of the way I feel about it. It's like it's too much of the politics that I could care less about. Yeah. It's like Star Wars: The Phantom Menace. Mm.
Yep.
Like where they like and all the 3 reboot films of Star Wars, where they're just like, they have these long-winded scenes in the Galactic Senate, and there's all these people, and there's trade negotiations, and you're like, why do I care about any of this? And I mean, granted, I care about the Klingons, and like, it's interesting, and I like learning about them, but it's like, it was more, like the value I get out of that episode is like, an education about, like, the Klingon, the way the Klingon society works, not a piece of entertainment.
Yeah. One of the problems I have with the more they teach us about how Klingon society works is the more it seems like totally dysfunctional, that a society like that would never get out of the Bronze Age, let alone develop warp technology.
Yeah, like hitting each other with pain sticks and
all that
business.
Well, the pain sticks, that's kind of like a rite of passage ritual type of thing. But more like every little thing involves them swearing an oath to the death or being dishonored and then being expelled from society.
Yeah.
Well, that's part of why I kind of got bored with the Klingons after a while. It's just the same thing over and over again. And Redemption's a perfect example of it. I don't need to know about all the political intrigue within the Klingon Empire. I honestly don't care.
Yeah, yeah. It's just bring honor back to my house, The other problem is,
you know, they built up to this Klingon Civil War for like a year and a half. Because they planted the seeds for this with Sins of the Father, which is in the bottom half of the third season. And then there's a couple – which is a fantastic episode. There are a couple great episodes in the fourth season that led up to this. The one where they brought Kalar back – and then the one where Geordi gets brainwashed, right? All 3 of which are great episodes. All 3 of which are better than this episode. And then they're building up to this, and then the Klingon Civil War is like just a couple fights, and then it's over. Whereas you think, you know, just stretch this out. Make the Klingon Civil War ongoing, right? And this is something that our crew has to deal
Yeah.
with now.
It's a lot of just like standing in a Klingon chamber and talking to a guy in a chair about honor or whatever. It's just like blah. That you know what I have to say, what I did like about this episode though is just seeing the Dura sisters, who I love, and Gowron, who's one of my favorite
Yeah, those
Klingons.
eyes, man.
'Cause he does the creepy eyes.
The thing I love most about the Gowron character is we don't know what to think about him. Are we supposed to trust him? Is he really honorable? What's his agenda? And it's something they kind of develop over a while, but it's not like, okay, he's evil, or no, okay, he's honorable. Like, if there's one character from, besides maybe Rolan, who might belong on Game of Thrones, it would be Gowron.
Yeah, 'cause he's conflicted in that way, in that specific way, yeah.
The other thing I want to say about this episode is it's never good where, and I guess this kind of goes up back to what we were talking about a little bit with Rivals. It's never good when your B storyline overshadows the A storyline, because the best part of this two-parter is Data being in command of the Sutherland and having to deal with this is the first time he's been in command, and he's got an executive officer who's kind of distrustful of artificial intelligence, and it's like the best part of a Worf episode shouldn't be Data. Which again would happen again a year later with we talked about this before once with the I think the episode's called Birthright, where Worf tries to go find his father on this Romulan prison camp, and the B storyline is Data learns about dreaming, and the Data dreaming stuff is awesome,
Totally.
and all the Klingon Romulan stuff is just so boring.
Honestly, I kind of like that episode. That's okay, so here's another unpopular Kayla
Let's hear it.
opinion. That's one of my more well-liked Klingon-centric episodes, is that storyline about Worf going to the Romulan prison camp,
Oh, okay. Well,
where he meets the other
sure.
Klingons and stuff. I don't know, it's just interesting and different. It like really stands out to me, and it's less about Klingon ritual and honor and law, and more about like Klingon
Sure.
people talking to each other and learning what it means to be Klingon in like a interpersonal
Sure,
way,
and not
rather than these are the legal intricacies of like the
in a
Klingon
Phantom Menace way.
constitution.
Yeah, I agree. I will agree with that. I don't think that's a wrong opinion, if there can be a wrong opinion. But I will forward. I think that the Data storyline is still way more interesting.
Yeah,
I
probably.
agree.
Yeah, redemption.
But yeah, I still have a special place in my heart for that storyline with Worf, because it's just I think it's really unique amongst the other Klingon episodes. I would have liked to have seen more of something like
Yeah,
that.
especially when like he meets the half Romulan, half Klingon lady, and he's got to
Yeah.
confront some of his prejudices there.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, and just side note, when you mentioned that Gowron could be a character in Game of Thrones, I think the ending for Game of Thrones, or maybe just the beginning of next season, should be a house entirely composed of Klingons that no one knew about. Come in, and everyone's just like totally freaked out by these Klingons, and they end up taking the Iron
There is a
Throne.
solution. I can get behind that. If they can introduce time travel, why can't they introduce Klingons?
Like, they don't even need to have
Yeah, I mean,
spaceships or
really.
anything. I just want them, like, running. I want a scene where there's characters that we know on the battlefield, like, about to face off, and then this horde of Klingons comes running at them with bat'leths.
Yes. Yeah, like 10 of them. 10, where 10 Klingons stood against 10,000 Cumans.
The
Yeah,
300 Klingon
redemption. So
edition.
that episode. I think Michael Dorn does great with the stuff he's got. Oh, the other thing I need to say is I really think that Sela falls flat, right? Like, we have this great, for Best of Both Worlds, we have the Mr. Worf fire, and that's the cliffhanger, what's going to happen. And then for Redemption, the cliffhanger is Denise Crosby appears out of nowhere, and she says, Jean-Luc Picard is human, and humans can show up when you least expect them. And it's like, what? How did this happen? And so then, over the summer, we're speculating, where did she come from? Is this a clone? Is this a shapeshifter? Is this, from yesterday's Enterprise, which turns out is what it was.
Turns out,
And then the character just doesn't, there's no real relevance to her being there, I felt like. Because for her to have been relevant, there, I think in this episode, there would have had to have been something connected to Tasha's friendship with Worf, which doesn't even come up at all. Like, he sees Sela at one point and he's like, huh. And then that's it.
I'm not a big fan of
No,
Sela.
not. And I get the feeling that, you
No.
know, this may not be the only time we talk about her tonight, Brian.
I like that
What are
they.
you trying to say,
I
Jared?
I'm a human, and I show up when you least expect it. What were you going to say, Kayla?
I'm sorry,
Oh,
Kayla,
no,
go
not at all. I like that they tried to bring Tasha Yar back into the story. But, yeah, no, I'm not going to defend Sela.
Yeah, I have to be honest with you. I didn't particularly like Tasha Yar, so it,
Yep.
like. Or and I and I'll maybe this will be an unpopular opinion, but I don't think Denise Crosby is a
Nope,
very good
she's
actress.
not.
I get how some people are nostalgic, because of characters that have passed away were on the show for a while. I get that part of it, but I didn't feel the need to have her coming back every once in a while. I didn't feel like it was adding anything to the
No,
show,
no. You know, something's
personally.
interesting that I've read, maybe you guys have read this too, is Denise Crosby was originally cast as Deanna Troi, and Marina Sirtis was originally cast as Tasha Yar, and Gene Roddenberry had the idea to
Right.
swap the two. And so, you know, I think his great skill was recognizing talent, and so I'm inclined to always give him the benefit of the doubt in a casting choice like that. But it would have been really interesting if he hadn't made that decision. And if Marina Sirtis had been the Tasha Yar character, and then, you know, the Deanna Troi character would probably have died, you know, if Denise
Yeah,
Crosby had made the
maybe.
same career choices. And so it'd be interesting to see how the series would have been different.
God, it's hard to
True.
imagine.
Yeah, it
They're
is
so
kind of hard to
different.
imagine. It is. Because honestly,
Captain, I'm firing torpedoes.
I sense the aliens don't want us to shoot their phasers at them in the face over and over again. So,
before we move on from this, and I know this is probably going to take up too much time, and we might have to cut it out, which is fine. But I just want to share this tidbit with you guys, because I was watching the trailers for these episodes, and the trailer for the Next Generation Blu-ray of Redemption is just really
Oh
bad.
yeah.
And
Oh really?
I was just gonna play like the clip for you, so like if we decide to use any of it, you
Yeah.
can react to it, or we can, like, when we say, "Oh, Redemption," and then put a little clip in there of the, like, especially, I'll tell you my favorite part after it, but let me hit play here and find the funny part.
All right.
Can you
It's
hear
back
that?
on. Yes.
Yep.
The darkest hour for the Klingon Empire.
Gonol Jok. Halt, Pasha!
Star Trek: The Next Generation, Redemption. Available for the first time ever on glorious high-definition Blu-ray.
I ask you, restore my family name.
Impossible. The grasp of Duras reaches out from the grave.
This monumental release features the show's milestone 100th episode, along with the earth-shattering second part, edited seamlessly into a feature-length presentation.
I am Toral. Son of Duras.
The family of Duras must never be allowed to rule the council.
Are you blind to what they represent?
Your blood will taint the way to the future.
Join us, Worf, and we will usher in a new era and regain our family name.
Yeah! Mr. Worf, your responsibilities as a Starfleet officer are incompatible with remaining on board a Klingon ship during a time of war.
Then I resign my commission as a Starfleet officer.
When the time is right, we will deal with the Federation and Captain Picard.
Yeah, there's that
this
acting.
galloping release is digitally remastered with
What a
pictures
line
sound
reading.
clarity like never before.
Nicely done.
And loaded with special features, including an all-new audio commentary track from
Yeah.
acclaimed Star Trek writer Ronald D.
That would actually
Moore.
be interesting to listen to what
Plus,
he had
an
to say about
exclusive
him.
documentary feature that explores Klingon
I'm
mythology.
actually real
I see more
I
than
think it
I
was
feel.
unification that I wanted to show
You're
you.
cling something. I want to cling something? You mean a Klingon? A Klingon?
And I think that the guys did a fantastic job of distilling all of the Klingon stuff from years and years and years ago into this one mythology.
Worf in pajamas.
Star Trek: The Next Generation, Redemption.
Yeah, it was
Or
actually,
remaining
damn, it was
nameless.
actually the, I was getting thrown off because it's the Romulans and the Klingons, but it's Unification that has the really hilarious line
Oh,
in it.
well,
That one was as bad as Unification.
let's save that for when we talk about it.
Okay.
It just It's funny that you mention unification, because we're going to talk about that next.
All right, let's go. Brian, take the helm.
All right, so we definitely picked this as one of the more disappointing efforts. Specifically, I think the first part of it, there's a tremendous amount. Unification had a tremendous amount of hype around it, obviously, because Leonard Nimoy was going to appear as Spock. There was a lot of promotion surrounding it, on television. Sweeps. There were a lot of magazines. Yeah, I mean, it had a lot of. I mean, it was. It had enough promotion that it had people who don't normally watch Star Trek watching it. Because people wanted to see Spock.
Yeah, Leonard Nimoy
on the Next Generation. Right. And I mean, when I watched it, when it aired, all I can remember is like wondering where the hell Spock was. I mean, you spend the entire episode trying to get to Spock. I mean, Leonard Nimoy shows up for the final, 15 seconds?
Yeah.
I mean, it was very, that part of it was very disappointing. And then even part two, I thought, I don't know.
Well, this whole if they sold it as a Spock story, then that's false advertising. Yeah.
And they did.
The episode wasn't about Spock at all.
No.
It's more about Sarek, to be honest.
And Picard.
It was great. Sarek and Picard. Performance with the, one scene he has.
Yeah, and killing off Sarek like that, I think, upset a lot of people.
Probably.
I thought it was okay. I thought it was done well, personally.
Yeah, Mark Lenard could read the ingredients to a box of cereal and make it sound dignified and awesome.
Yeah. It's Mark Leonard, by the way, Jared.
Sorry, Leonard.
But I often wondered why he never had a bigger career, Mark Leonard, because he had tremendous gravitas. I mean, he just was able to inhabit that that character with so much dignity and power.
Absolutely.
You know? Anyway, we're digressing. So the whole idea behind, obviously, unification was having Spock come back, and even in the episode that Leonard appears in throughout, Leonard kind of phones it in.
I agree.
It's a pretty lifeless performance as Spock. He's not really into it. You can tell he's not really engaged in the work. And that's one of two times I've watched Leonard Nimoy kind of phone in Spock. The other time was Star Trek V. Like, I just feel like I didn't feel like he was engaged in the work. And maybe it was because it was a bad story, because it really is kind of shitty.
Can I bring up Star Trek Into Darkness?
Oh, with Leonard?
Yeah.
We'll give Leonard a pass at that point. He was old.
They literally filmed that in his living room.
Yep.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, they made it very easy for him.
Yeah. I'm obviously paraphrasing here, but I think the conversation went something like, "Hey, Leonard, will you please be in our movie again?" And he was like, "Do I have to put on pants?"
Anyway, I thought it was very disappointing. You know, there is probably no bigger, more iconic character in the history of the Star Trek franchise than Spock. And like, it just felt like they squandered an amazing opportunity with unification.
Especially, it's 20 years ago now, 25 years ago, but this came out weeks before Undiscovered Country came out, right? And so this was part of the...
Really?
Yeah, it came out middle of November.
Oh, yeah, it was part of the promotion for the Undiscovered...
And Undiscovered Country was beginning of December 91. So...
Wow.
Yeah, and Leonard partly did the role as a way to promote the Undiscovered Country.
Because,
You think that was a contractual thing for the film?
No, but I think it was an inducement to get him to do it.
Mm.
That's why they kind of obliquely mentioned the plot lines of the Undiscovered Country in the episode.
Perhaps you are aware of the small part I played in the role of Overture to Peace with the Klingons.
Yeah, exactly. That's there for very specific reason.
And teasing the whole idea of what happens to Kirk in the Undiscovered Country. And he says, perhaps you're aware, or he says that the consequences that Captain Kirk suffered because of that. And it's like, what does that mean? Is Kirk going to die?
Right.
And so it's part of the buildup for that.
Right.
And it doesn't work. The other thing is the evil Romulan plan is perhaps the least cunning thing we've seen the Romulans do in their entire history.
Yeah.
They set up this interesting mystery plot with the Enterprise where they're investigating stuff. And, there's these stolen ships and Riker needs to deal with this Ferengi weapons merchant. And so, I like that they're trying to set up, this mystery plot, but the conclusion to the mystery plot is just the Romulans are going to invade Vulcan. And it's like, wait, do they really think that they're going to be able to get away with that?
Right. In the heart of the Federation space.
They can just because that would obviously that would be like, you know, if France invaded New Orleans to retake New Orleans, right, in the United States. Do they really think that the rest of the U.S. military would just let that happen? No, that would result in like a nuclear war, right?
Yeah.
Which, of course, you know, we hope that doesn't happen. But it's you know,
I think we're safe.
Spock is trying to do his thing where he's trying to reunify these two peoples through, you know, basically reintroducing Vulcan culture. And it's like, okay, well, then the Romulan plan should have been, you know, mirrored that. They should have been trying to appeal to perhaps Vulcan arrogance to say, no, you should be – we're sending our own essentially missionaries to Vulcan to bring them back to our side of the fold. And instead it's just, no, we're just going to drop a bunch of troops there. It's not even a lot of troops. It's like 2,000 troops. How on earth are you going to occupy a planet of billions with such a small invasion force? And then it resolves very clunkily and very very quickly, and there's no real kind of satisfying conclusion or resolution.
No, and they never really follow up on it. I mean, part of that may have had to do with contractual issues or dealing with Leonard Nimoy or whatever. But like Spock was on Romulus for years after that. Why did we not hear from him when the movies went, you know, when Nemesis was taking place on Romulus? Yeah, where was Spock? Like, you know, I don't know. I mean, obviously he wasn't there because there was no room in the budget for Leonard Nimoy.
Yeah.
But, you know. But I don't know. I will say this about unification. The one good thing it does have is that great scene with Spock and Data.
I agree.
I mean, you had to have that scene because Data is very clearly Spock's spiritual descendant. So, and a little bit of trivia. The guy, the Romulan that Spock hangs out with, I forget his name in the episode, is played by Malachi Throne, who played Mendez in The Menagerie.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Right, and he was also the voice of the Keeper in The Cage.
That's Yeah. Not Tomalak. Pardek, Senator Pardek.
Pardek,
yeah, that's
right.
That was a good piece of continuity.
Yeah. Yeah, it was cool having him there.
Yeah, I'm trying to think anything else about unification.
Before we move on from it, because that was the one I actually wanted to show
you.
Okay,
let's hear it.
In Star Trek, The Next Generation, Unification. Available for the first time ever on high-definition Blu-ray.
Do not move.
Romulans.
If we are discovered by the Romulans, it means death for us all.
And Vulcans.
I hate Vulcans.
Biological cousins with centuries of conflict, and one man is sacrificing his life to reunite them.
I'm looking for Ambassador Spock.
You have found him,
Captain Picard.
This sort of cowboy diplomacy will not easily be tolerated anymore.
I cannot ignore the potential rewards that a union between our two worlds would bring.
We are going to start something here, you and I, that will redraw the face of the Quadrant.
But not everyone is ready for reunification.
Do not be distressed. Your dream of reunification is not dead, but simply take a different form. The Romulan conquest of Vulcan.
Leonard Nimoy reprises his unforgettable role as Spock from the original series for the first and only time on television.
Logic cannot explain why. I only know that I must pursue this.
This epic two-part story has been seamlessly unified into one feature-length presentation, and having attracted over 25 million viewers, it is one of the most watched episodes of the series.
You are as stubborn as another captain of the Enterprise I once knew.
Plus new special features that are sure to live long and prosper.
The actors that we brought on board from the original series were done for very specific reasons. So Leonard agreed to do two episodes of the show, which was a great deal of fun.
Only one, Rick.
The Next Generation, Unification, materializes on high-definition Blu-ray November 19th.
It is the only logical conclusion.
Yeah.
Ugh.
So,
God, that was awful.
Isn't that horrible? Like, these special features are sure to live long and prosper.
Leonard didn't even participate in those extra features.
Yeah. Anyway, I thought it was hilarious how they're like, Vulcans. Something about Vulcans. Romulans. Something about Romulans. Reunification.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awful.
Yeah. Like, they literally, like, couldn't figure out what to say about it.
Yeah, kind of a whole lot of nothing. Although I will say I do like the phrase "cowboy diplomacy." I like the. I like.
Me too. That was the best moment of the trailer, and the.
And I do love how indignant Spock gets when Picard says that. Because it is kind of a condescending, snotty thing.
Yes, it is. To say to Spock. Absolutely, it's his way of
especially to Spock. Yeah,
to Spock of all people.
It's his way of saying, "I think the way I do this is better than the way you guys did this."
Yeah.
Or better than the way Kirk did it.
Can you imagine if he said that to Kirk's face? Kirk would have been "Fuck you."
Yeah. Like, okay, well, I'm not going to come back and beat up an old man.
Yeah.
The other thing.
Just three old men wrestling in the desert.
Yep.
There's a the phrase cowboy diplomacy. I really wanted to hear Chris Pine use that when he and Leonard Nimoy or Spock meet, Spock Prime meet in the 2009 when he says, you know, why are you here? You know, when he gives some kind of explanation, he says, oh, so some kind of cowboy diplomacy. I thought that would have been cute to have an echo of it there because there's so. So many little touches like that in the 2009, and so I felt like that one was missing.
Yeah, and if there's ever a cowboy diplomacy kind of character, it's Chris Pine's Jim Kirk.
Yeah,
perfect. The other thing, the one thing I want to say that I do like about this episode, but I didn't realize at the time, the actor who plays the Klingon captain is Stephen Root, who also played the billionaire on News Radio, which you guys may have not seen, but he also plays the loser on Office Space, the one with the swing line, the red swing line, and it's just a.
No way! No
and,
way!
And for him to do this just completely different character is wonderful.
Yeah, it's totally different.
Yeah.
Oh wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. So I like that part. Anyway, there we go. So unification, very disappointing.
Yeah. Yeah. I just want one little coda. Like, it seemed like Rick Berman kind of always grudgingly bought the original characters back. There's always, like, a certain lack of embracing. Even, I mean, all right, maybe you could say that the Relics episode with Scotty is kind of a very sweet nod to the original series. But other than that, like, I never felt like Rick really wanted to do anything involving the original series unless he had to. So you get these kind of half-assed kind of stories, in my opinion,
which is
like Generations.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. I mean, Generations was a waste.
Yeah.
Unification is a waste.
On the one hand, like, I can't blame him if that's the way he felt, because, you know, the reason for, not that that can't be done well, but the reason for conceiving of an episode where, say, we bring Scotty back is to bring Scotty back, and so to make that the driving force behind your story is not a great place to start. So if that's really how he felt, I can kind of understand that point of view.
I also think when he started out, one of the objectives they were given is we need to differentiate ourselves from the original series. So there's episodes of Deep Space Nine and Voyager where they do some nice nostalgia for the original series, which in a way they kind of couldn't do on TNG because they were so busy trying to be their own creature.
Yeah, but even once they finally established themselves as being their own thing, I always felt like they pulled their punches and they never really, like, it was never like a full-throated embrace of it.
No, there's definitely nothing to compare to DS9's sequel to Trouble with Tribbles.
Yeah. But that was like a 30th anniversary thing.
The same with the Voyager episode with Sulu.
Yeah. Right, flashback.
So there's actually, and this is something I want to talk about more in depth eventually, but TNG never really gives TOS its due until First Contact.
Oh, it's Zephyr Cochran.
Yeah, Zephyr
Cochran
and the meeting of the Vulcans.
Right.
Okay, we would like to touch on our penultimate episode of the night, second time I've used that word. And this is our only entry from Enterprise. Any of you listening probably know what we're going to talk about, and that would be the finale, These Are the Voyages. This episode has been criticized plenty. Rick Berman billed it as a love letter to the fans. This was a love letter that was rejected with extreme prejudice.
Ouch.
It doesn't work as a finale for Enterprise, but I think its heart is in the right place. I mean, it's designed to say goodbye to the whole era of Star Trek's history. Yeah, I mean, that's what it's designed to
do.
But
that's all it does.
Yeah, no, that's all it does. Like I said, I think its heart was in the right place, but it was the execution was.
It felt random. Yeah. It felt like someone was like, "Oh, you have to write an episode that we're shooting tomorrow. That's the final episode of the season." Mm. And they were like, "Oh shit! All right, let's make it a TNG thing." For some reason,
and a completely incongruous TNG thing, right? I mean, the whole
It's like it was stole the finale was stolen from the characters you'd grown to love over the last 4 years because they made it about Riker, Indiana,
and about a very random episode. I mean, I love the episode of the Pegasus that they insert this into. But it doesn't make any – A, the two actors are 11 years older in it, and it's just kind of silly. And B, there's no
– Yeah, and they look visibly older.
Yeah, and it's only them two.
Although, no, we hear Data's voice over the intercom.
We do hear Data.
But it's like – it reminds me of if you guys like Deadpool. You know, he's known for breaking the fourth wall, and he makes a crack at one point, and they're like, huh, I keep coming to this mansion, and I only ever see you two X-Men. It's like they could only afford to get two of the X-Men.
Yeah,
that's what it's like here. It's like, oh, they could only afford two TNG crew.
And so the thing I think might have been better for this would have been if, you know, at this point, this is 3 years after Nemesis. Riker and Troy got married. How about the two of them are, you know, a married couple, and maybe they're teaching their daughter or their son, who's, you know, five or six or whatever, about the history of ships called Enterprise. And they say, here's this – let's go on the holodeck with our wee child here, and let's show you this is a momentous occasion, one of the most important moments from all of history of ships that have borne this famous name, right?
Yeah, I actually like that a lot. Like, it still would have been kind of dumb, but temporally it would make
it would have been less
sense.
Dumb.
Yeah.
It would have been a little bit less dumb, yeah.
The other thing that bugged me is my favorite character on Enterprise was Trip. The engineer, and that they just kill him off screen is so unsatisfying.
Yeah,
and I think Connor Trinneer is still a little ticked off about it.
Yeah,
I don't blame him. I have to say, I think if you want to drop this episode and pretend it doesn't exist, Terra Prime, the episode that aired right before it, functions nicely as kind of a finale too.
It's even got RoboCop in it.
Yep, Mr. Weller.
Yeah, these are the voyages.
Yeah. So
yes, they are.
What did you guys? Do you guys have any other thoughts on it?
I did like the one thing I like about it is that they did something different in keeping it to an hour. They didn't do a big overblown two-parter. I thought that was different.
Mm.
Yeah.
That hardly saves it. That hardly saves it. And you know, it's weird when the best thing you can say about a bad episode of TV is that it wasn't very long.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. So, Libby.
There you go. Its heart was in the right place, but it was just kind of dumb.
Yep. Ill-advised.
Hardly a love letter.
And now, I think we should jump right in and talk about the last episode that we're going to talk about.
The most. Yeah.
Yeah,
the
I think so.
Disappointing episode of Star Trek. Brian, will you lead the charge on this one?
Yeah, this could be a little controversial for some, but we think it might be the second part of Best of Both Worlds.
Ooh.
Best of Both Worlds Part 2.
Yeah. I think it has a lot to do with the fact that it would be hard to top the cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Like, it's just that's one of the great cliffhangers I've ever watched on television. And, and Michael Piller admitted that he wrote that and had no idea how to write his way out of it because he wasn't even planning on sticking around for the following season.
Can I tell you how much that annoys me when I learned about that? Because that seems almost kind of disrespectful to the fan base.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what to say about that. But you could tell that part two is written by someone who is trying to figure out how to write his way out of a very constricted corner. I mean, it's just I find part two to be incredibly flat and uninteresting in many ways. I don't know how you guys feel about it.
I think that the way that we've defined disappointing episodes, this fits quite nicely because the way we defined it is something that was very hyped and didn't live up to that hype. And the problem with Best of Both Worlds parts 1 and 2 is that, like you said, this cliffhanger at the end of part 1, you know, is Picard a Borg now? Like, did we just lose our captain? That leaves you hanging. And if you're watching the show as it was airing, you had to wait all summer to figure out what was going to happen. So, of course, you're like, here you are watching this episode going, oh, my God, what the heck? This is nuts. And then it ends and you're talking to your friends and you're thinking about it all summer long. And there's no way that anything could live up to the hype that you had created in your own mind.
Right.
You know, for that. So it's like you said, they wrote themselves into this corner where they made it too good. They made the cliffhanger too good.
Yeah.
So there really wasn't a good way to get out of it. I mean, at least no one figured out what it was.
Especially if they went into it without any plan. As Brian's just pointed out.
Yeah. But I think another point, too, that Jared brought up when we were talking about this earlier is that the characters, the actors' contracts are apparently up for renegotiation at that point.
Or Patrick's was.
Okay, so so if you're a fan watching it at the time, you're like, well, if his contract's coming up, you know, maybe they're not going to bring him back. Maybe this is it. So that's a legitimately thing to, like, you really don't know which way it's going to go. And I think a lot of times when shows do that, there's a lot of famous examples, right, of cliffhangers. Everyone's hyped up about it all summer long, and then the explanation they have for it just falls flat.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, you know, I don't have a problem with Best of Both Worlds Part 2 as an episode. I think if you watch them back to back in that context, that, you know, if someone had never seen it and they're watching it today and they watch both Part 1 and 2 right one after the other, I don't think it would be that disappointing.
It would be interesting to test that. Well, you know, I'll have to my brother's been showing my nieces TNG, and I don't think he's shown them this yet, so it would be interesting to watch it with them and see how they react to it.
Yeah. No, but I know what you're saying, Caleb. Without having that whole gap to sit there and deliberate about it over the summer and figure out what the hell's going on.
I totally see
what you're saying. Yeah, you're probably right. In retrospect, it probably doesn't look
as bad. The one thing I would like to add, though, that makes Best of Both Worlds Part 2 look really bad by comparison is how great the next episode is, Family. And I think the reason that
I love Family,
this, you know, I guess we'll call it a trilogy, is so well remembered is less because of the conclusion Part 2 and more because of the episode with Family. And in fact, most people look at Best of Both Worlds and they think of it as a Picard episode, but it's actually a Riker episode. And the reason they remember it as a Picard episode is because Family is so strong.
Yeah.
And I think that's the turning point where, you know, Riker is arguably the protagonist the first 3 years of the show, is I think we may have talked about before. And Family is where Patrick Stewart just grabs the attention of the viewer and runs with it for the rest of this franchise.
I agree. The family's a seminal episode for me. Absolutely. As far as Picard was concerned. Like, I really warmed up to the character with that episode. It showed that he was that perfect.
Yeah.
Because up to that point, it was hard to really completely empathize with Jean-Luc Picard, because he was just this perfectly controlled man who very, very rarely made any kind of mistakes. It's hard to relate to somebody like that all the time.
Yeah, and he was sort of humorless.
Especially when it came to, like, hating children. Which is not usually a quality.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Yeah. Now, Patrick, it took Patrick a while to figure out Picard, too. Like, he played him kind of stiff at the beginning, and then gradually you could see him loosen up.
I also think this is a good episode for reminding us that Picard is French and not English.
Mm-hmm.
we need reminding quite often.
I often wondered why they didn't, like, change the name or come up with a rationale for why an English, you know, a Frenchman would be speaking with an English accent.
And drinking Earl Grey tea.
Why not? Couldn't they have written his background? Like, you know, yeah, he was born in France, but he was raised in London or something.
I think they did with Julian Bashir is the idea that, you know, he's of Middle Eastern descent, but he was raised in the United Kingdom.
Hmm.
Mm.
Which.
Yeah, I always thought that was an odd thing.
They could have even said something about how, you know, linguistically, Europe had changed a lot, and so, like, this region of France where I grew up had an English accent. I mean, maybe that's too on the nose, but you know what I mean. There's, like, a million ways they could have done it, and it was just never addressed, and kind of like, wait, what? He's French? No. A bit culture blind.
Like you said, yeah, totally.
Also,
it's like the Chakotay being, being a quote-unquote Native
but
American.
But he doesn't belong to any specific tribe. Right.
Yeah, it's like a bit culture blind. It's like they tried, but didn't
make
sense.
Yeah, and the whole thing with Picard, not only does he drink tea, but he's obsessed with Shakespeare instead of, for example, like Molière or Tartuffe or wait, no, Tartuffe is a play that Molière wrote. Anyway, but some, you know, a French philosopher or writer instead of an iconically English one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Best of Both Worlds Part 2, the most disappointing episode. How do we feel about that?
Yeah, we might get a little bit of pushback for this one.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not going to call it the most disappointing episode. Because, like, I stick with my thing, you know, it was disappointing to those who had it overhyped for them, maybe by themselves, you know, because of the awesome cliffhanger.
Right.
So you know, as an episode, I have no problem with it.
No, it's not a bad episode. It's just as a follow-up to a classic, I guess that's its problem.
The other thing that always kind of stuck me in this episode is when they've got Picard and they're trying to fix him in Data's lab, and he says, "Sleep, Data." He's speaking sleep metaphorically, Data. Right? He says, "We need to put them to sleep." And Beverly says, "Oh, he must be exhausted."
But Beverly, like, I know. When she said this,
Beverly's
stupid.
Data's the one who should have interpreted that literally, and Beverly's the one who should have interpreted it figuratively.
Yeah, that's so bad, that little bit. Oh my god.
Sorry, that's really hilarious. It's like, you idiots.
Yeah, I mean, come on. Oh god, he's exhausted. Yeah. Poor man.
It's like, because Data's the one who established is very literal thinking.
Yeah, no, that's right. Actually, I never thought about it. They should have flipped
absolutely
that.
They should have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Other interesting thing about this episode is LeVar Burton, either he'd had surgery or he was sick when this was filmed, and so they gave all his lines to Chief O'Brien. Which doesn't necessarily make it stronger or weaker. I think Colm Meaney certainly was great opportunity for him.
Yeah.
You
got to know him better.
And they kind of tweak something where they say, the signals that the Borg use are similar to transporter signals, so that's why we have Chief O'Brien here.
Because that's all he can do.
Just like on the Chief O'Brien comic strip.
Yep.
Alrighty, well, there we have it. Anything else on Best of Both Worlds or our disappointing list? We know this has been kind of a long episode.
No, I think that pretty much nails it. The thesis statement of our disappointing episodes are they were kind of dumb.
They are.
Yeah.
They were kind of dumb.
Yep. So there we have it.
No Treknik dote this week,
Jared? Okay, so
here's
my Treknik dote. There's a line
All right.
In Voyage Home where they're at the whale, the aquarium. And there's this really dorky guy who says to Dr. Jillian, do whales attack people like in Moby Dick? And so I was at the Baltimore Aquarium yesterday, and we went to a dolphin show, and I went up to the woman who led it, and I said to her, so do whales or dolphins ever attack people like in Moby Dick?
Wait, did she just have this look on her
face?
No, like,
she actually had a really good answer for me. She said dolphin mothers are very, very protective of their daughters. And if you get anywhere near a pod, that's what they call groups of dolphins. If you get near a pod while there's, you know, young females, the mothers will go crazy on you. And so apparently dolphins will attack people like in Moby Dick.
Not sons, though, just their daughters.
Yeah, the sons they don't care as much about.
Like feminist dolphins.
Well, I think it's more of a question of reproductive success. Like, if you lose a couple boys, that's okay, but if you lose the females,
I mean, in a reproductive sense, you need a lot more females than you do males.
Yes, absolutely. No question. Anyway,
that's awesome. I've always
that line always comes like that extra just does such a dorky job.
Like Moby Dick.
I always wanted to. Do whales attack people like in Moby Dick? It's like, really? You don't think that might have been fictionalized, buddy?
Is Moby Dick a documentary?
And, you know, they insert it. Yeah, they insert it in there so that Jillian can say to the audience, no, whales are wonderful and peaceful.
Totally.
So I just.
Save the whales.
So I just. It's a little metafictional. Exactly. So I just wanted. I knew that was my opportunity, and I knew I needed a Trek anecdote for tonight.
Good job.
I'm sure to ask her.
I approve.
Thank you.
Indeed.
Appreciate that. Okay. Well, there we have it. Episode 20 of the Shuttle Pod. Thank you for coming with us on the journey.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you next time.
Guy walks into the doctor's office. The doctor tells him you need an operation. The guy says, I want a second opinion. The doctor says, okay, you're ugly too, but boom.